That's why I'm all in bed. Nobody gives me sympathy.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, with a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi, joined once again with my co-host Weird. Say hello, Weird.
I would if you could get my name correct, just once. That is Sir Weirdington Esquire. And for a future note, we're doing some minor renovation in the bunker, so you might hear the occasional clatter, scream of the dying, scaffold falling.
Gunfire. Explosions. Yeah, so hey, welcome back, folks. We're here again, episode 21, chapter 27. Another fine day in the podcast bunker. We're made it. We're here again in this beautiful blighted hellscape that we like to call the wasteland. So I guess we should just launch right into this episode since I'm rambling. So Weird. Tell us what we learned last week, though.
Oh shit! That's a thing that I have to do every episode. How do I keep forgetting? It's like my brain like tries to protect me by editing that essential information out that every single podcast I have to. Right, what did we learn last week? What did we learn last week? Was it Thunderdome last week?
No, last week was Underground.
Oh, we're beyond. Oh, we've gone beyond Thunderdome and gone underground. Oh, in the underground. A whole lot of exposition happened. Like, just, again, I think that's redundant. Like, every episode, a shitload of irrelevant exposition happens. So, anyway, the cool dad and his broom mustache commissions Blackjack and crew to go try to initiate peace talks with the Steel Rangers. And their brilliant plan for doing this is not to, like, wave a white flag on the border of Steel Ranger territory. They're going to infiltrate it.
Yes, the much more sensible decision.
And so in order to do this, they have to go to the Diamond Dogs and convince them to help. But the Diamond Dogs need equipment from the Geology Museum, Central Goosestepsburg. But at the museum, Blackjack gets her katana, finally. Because someone breaks the case. Okay. Which she couldn't do before. And then somewhere there, we get some justification to go visit that one horrible, creepy, cult town. To go talk to, as played by Wookie Goldberg. And she doesn't say anything of particular interest. And then there's a party. And then they go underground. It's a long series of chase scenes. And it turns out that, like, the source of the anti-healing innervation field is also underground. So in order to, like, get to where they're going by going deep enough into the earth, they're, like, get perilously close to, like, a death aura, which we did find out this episode may or may not be being generated by, like, a Cthulhu. There's some sort of Lovecraftian horror buried beneath the city, and that's what's preventing healing. Dr. Professor the Fallen permanently loses a wing due to the bad vibes. The bad vibes are so bad that everyone nearly dies, but Blackjack managed to pull through with the help of the scolding of an invisible skeleton horse.
I just had one of those out of context moments. sorry, continue.
They all get on an elevator, nominally safe, but bleeding to death.
Yep.
Presumably to arrive at the top floor and immediately be gunned down by the paranoid North Korea-esque territory that they've chosen to infiltrate. for diplomatic purposes.
Yes. That's
and this was all so stupid that in our protagonist's near-death experience, like nigh-on-to-dying moments, it occurs to her finally, this was the dumbest thing we could possibly have done.
Could not be a all right, stupider.
What perk did we earn?
We got forged in the hoof. You've sucked up more enervation than any pony should live through. You suffer 25% less enervation damage, and your healing items decay half as fast while in your possession. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. That's where we're.
I mean, like if Blackjack can be inoculated to bullets, why not Eldritch anti-healing energy?
Yeah, just gotta be close to more of it more often, and she'll be completely immune. That's just how things work. That's just science. Oh man. All right. I guess it's my turn to launch into the chapter. Proper for this week. Can't pawn this off on anyone because I refuse to let Weird read even one sentence of this story for fear of him incinerating on contact. But into the text this chapter this week. So BJ wakes up in a nightmare again that she's not quite sure that she's in a nightmare of Stable 99 again. And she dips in and out of consciousness in some sort of hospital. Doctors are scrambling to sedate her as she's freaking out and yelling about Glory because she's worried about Glory the most because of her wing falling off and all that shit. Doctors are basically hold her down, strap her to a table, and then donk her with a memory orb. this chapter's starting off strong.
So what's in it?
All right. Oh man, this is a really long.
If it's not a beautiful day at the beach, of course it's not. But like,
it kind of is actually.
Okay.
So it's a memory of like a big party, like a big like in the show there was like a big yearly party that they would have called the Grand Galloping Gala. And it's a recreation of this and this, but it's also like the McIntosh's Marauders are being awarded a bunch of awards for a bunch of heroism and bravery. We get a bunch of dialogue between them. A lot of it is really unimportant stuff. The only things that we get to know about from this is that this party is largely here to make, so that Luna can look good in front of the nobles and get them on their side, which Golden Blood is apparently playing four-dimensional chess about because he believes that the nobles need to trust Luna so that the rest of the people can trust her, which is a stupid, stupid sentiment, but fuck it, whatever.
Who's this member from the perspective of?
I don't remember. It's fucking... think Jetstream, one of the Marauders? It's not Golden Blood, I know that. But, yeah, Golden Blood's playing four-dimensional chess. Apparently Rarity and Vanity is a thing. Are a romantic couple. In this, which is only really outrageous to me specifically because of, in FOE, one of Rarity's last moments in the story is confessing her love for Fluttershy, and I guess Somber just doesn't, like, didn't think that needed to be canon.
He's a queer ally, don't you know?
Yeah.
It's always important to remember, Somber, queer ally.
Yep. Erasing lesbians.
He just didn't believe in that specific relationship. It didn't feel true to him, and so he wanted to help erase I guess queer baiting is how I would see it. I don't know, like a gay relationship should only exist if it is extremely and intensely justified.
Queer baiting that the character's dying moments is to save the person she's in love with. Yeah, queer baiting. It's mostly just frustrating to me and anyone that like cares about anything involving the LGBT, I guess.
You know, it's frustrating to me as a pedant. Speaking as a pedant, you fucking this asshole wastes so much of our fucking time on his fucking lore building and like world building and like all these details of here's this faction we'll never actually talk to, but we're gonna spend an entire page describing them in his like fucking pristine world, this globe he's built for the story to express. Makes all the sense in the world to use a memory orb as anesthesia, because it does seem to lock somebody out of consciousness for a good stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But why the fuck would they have this one? Like, if you have a medical memory orb, if you have, like, an anesthesia sphere to bonk people with and, like, transport them into, like, somebody else's memory, like, why wouldn't you, like, Dr. Parsons, it's time for your vacation. We're pulling out all the stops. We're giving you all your favorite things. You're going to enjoy the fuck out of the next 12 hours. All right, we're going to extract that from you, but you get to, we'll give you the opportunity to re-experience it. And henceforth, if we have a patient who is, like, at risk of biting off their own tongue, they're going to experience that 12 hours. Why the fuck?
I could make a devil's advocate sort of excuse for it, but it's still stupid why they would have this.
Oh, it's because they're fucking, it's because they're fucking, it's supposed to replicate, like, the audio tapes. Like, we don't have, like, the real estate in the game to express all of our cool ideas about our big story and all the people in the background that, like, you won't really have time to meet, or time or context to meet in this shooty action game. So for this long stretch that you're, like, looting or plodding around in scholarly out, like, here, have this audio tape. But how do you express that in a fucking written story? Well, let's find any excuse to, like, dip into our deep lore. And so, like,
deep lore.
What's the, like, it's a half thought is what I feel like it is. It's like a moment of shining cleverness of, like, okay, what would a hospital do with a struggling patient? Well, I mean, memory orbs lock people lock people down for a while. Okay. Well, but of course,
since it's a story,
I can't spare an opportunity to talk about how cool Golden Blood is again, to give more context for how cool Golden Blood was and how he set up everything about the world as it is now from with the like core cast of six. I guess this should be an important memory orb.
Yep, it's got to be deep, integral, important to the lore. But a lot of this memory orb doesn't really matter, because it's a lot of just, like, characters putzing around and schmoozing on each other about, like, stuff. Setting up stuff we already know, meeting more of the Marauders to actually have them talk, because in a bunch of other ones, they actually haven't had, like, any speaking lines, so we get a little bit more of Echo, who is a stuttery dude who's on a communications officer, and we get more about Somm, who is a, like, deeply religious sniper, whose whole character is, she, like, every person she kills, she asks for forgiveness for killing them. And
I'm very sorry.
No, she's a unicorn, so she just levitates it.
Oh, okay.
oh man.
Yes, I was very sorry. I fell on evil.
Oh man. The only other important thing that really happens here is MacTosh starts chatting up Twilight, because he's in several chapters ago. We met his, like, some this, like, mysterious lover of his named Maripony, and she, you know, she works for Twilight, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna go talk to Twilight and find out what she's like and what's going on with her, and, like, Twilight is uber suspicious and weird about this whole certain, like, interaction. There's a lot of, like, double talk and weirdness over this this conversation where he's asking about Maripony, and she's initially confused in who he's talking about, and then, like, just kind of, like, I don't know, gives him some half answers on, like, what to do to, like, romance her up, and that's only really important, again, for Shark Jump reasons. That's the memory orb.
So,
yes,
ponder for a moment that every... virtually every person who has ever been to this hospital for a major surgery
has seen this.
Has been to this fucking party.
Yeah, has seen this. But my favorite part about this is that this is entirely without context if you're not Blackjack. If you have not seen all the Maripony stuff and the Golden Blood stuff and, like, the MacIntosh Marauders, these are just some people that you have no idea. Like, or do you mean to tell me they have different memory orbs, like bespoke memory orbs that they donk people with? And also, like, it, like,
there's a drawer, and they pull out, and like,
well, no, it's not a drawer. They're all
okay,
the floor,
this one's
right?
The protagonist.
It's all the floor, right? So they just pick one off the floor and hit them with it. But no, so the actual like worst part about this is that I guess a plot point that hasn't really like come up yet, but it just made me think about this. Only unicorns can use memory orbs like this. So does it just mean that Earth Pony and Pegasi are just fucked in a doctor situation?
You know, that actually answers a question I was about to bring up, which was like, how do non-unicorns like move these orbs, or like pick up and utilize these orbs at all? And like, I just had the hilarious slash disturbing image of a horse like trying to create suction with their like mouth to like like trying to hold an entire orange in your mouth without biting into it, like is what I imagine where the bunny's like trying to move and a crystalline sphere around.
Oh, that's beautiful. Okay. But yeah, there's a special kind of black memory orb that can be used by anybody, but that's not important right now. It's not worth, not even worth bringing up, really. But anyways, we're back into the memory orb. BJ wakes up in a hospital bed with a doctor sitting over top of her, or talking at her, because BJ's blindfolded at the point. So we get to meet Triage, another absolute asshole doctor that I can't understand why they're a doctor. Triage is very surly, has basically no sense of bedside manner, lays it to BJ pretty straight. It's like, okay, you were like 10 different kinds of fucked up when we found you. Like, you almost bled to death, you're covered in tumors, you're just, your whole body's fucked up. We've had to run you through, like, one of those, like, medical tubes for a while, to get all that out. Like, we've gotten most of the tumors out, but there's still shit that we can't get out, like her heart and brain are basically fucked, and, like, completely. As an additional caveat, her leg bones are now fucked up because of the taint exposure. So shit, her bones are now more like the consistency of rubber, so she can't walk anymore without, like, assistance. But, yeah. And then, like, Triage kind of drops the, like, the bomb on her of, like, yeah, your body's so fucked up, you have about 6 months to maybe a year to live from here. Like, you are so irreparably damaged, we can't even fix you with magic medical science. BJ kind of, like, dismisses this and is a little bit more focused on seeing what happened to the rest of the crew and what's up with Glory. It seems the crew is pretty banged up as well. Lachuna is just completely catatonic. Rampage is kind of shell-shocked from her experiences of rolling through multiple personalities dozens of times within 4 seconds. But BJ is like, all right, great. We're gonna immediate thought is like, all right, gonna try and see if I can do something for Glory then, because like, if I'm gonna die, I don't really care. Dr. Sourpuss like bitches at Blackjack for being suicidal, basically, and it's really frustrating. Where she basically complains that, like, well, like, you know, you shouldn't be so suicidal. It makes my job harder. And have you thought about me, basically, as a doctor? And chastises her self-destructive impulses, which I would almost kind of like, but, like, to a certain degree, because it's actually calling out one of the main problems of the story, that, like, it presents self-destructive urges as being a net good as long as they're being used for positive things. Like, if I die saving orphans, then, like, it's good kind of thing. But this is pretty hollow, knowing later conversations that are had with other characters that sort of disproves this theory by Triage. So this conversation's basically moot. BJ then has, like, convenes with 21. It's important to note for the a bulk of this chapter, BJ is now rolling around in a wheelchair.
Not octodadding around.
That's later.
Great.
But yeah.
Wait.
Yes.
So Has any hay been made of the fact that, prisoner?
Oh, they're not prisoner.
Good to see you're doing well enough that we can begin your interrogation soon.
Oh, they're not Steel Rangers. Let me roll back 2 seconds, because it gets explained here. They're actually members of the Collegiate, the, like, faction of, like, tech ponies that want to potentially help the Waste, but kind of don't. They're in their university that they've turned into, like, a home base. In a similar way that, like, the arena Raiders, because Hoofball, the university for the Collegiate, because smart horses, whatever, and they also have, like, medical facilities and all that shit, that they can convert into a more, like, proper hospital.
Okay. How? How did they get here?
The Collegiate found them. It'll be explained slightly better in the next chapter, who actually found them, but, like...
So the entire mission was a failure?
Yep.
Is what I'm hearing. Like, yeah. Did they take a left turn at fucking Albuquerque? Like...
as far as I can tell, the Collegiate's, like, home base is on this side of the river. They're still in the Steel Ranger side of the territory, it's just they're on the outskirts of it, essentially.
Man, I'm aggravated.
Yeah, this story really likes to stop dead for other stories, doesn't it? Remember how we're in a war arc right now?
Okay. I'm having a difficult time processing. Like, I'm having a difficult time, like, putting together the thought that, so we tried so far.
And we got like, so hard. We
got so far.
And in the end, it didn't even matter.
That, like, cool, you guys fucking wrecked yourselves on your way to a hospital. You took a fucking left turn at Albuquerque and accomplished 0%. Like, you infiltrated friendly territory.
They got close to the Steel Rangers.
You could have walked!
No, they couldn't. Because the bridge was in no man's land, and they didn't want to swim across the river because it's also dangerous. Their best idea was underground.
How much of a no man's land? Like, is it literally wall-to-wall zombie? Like,
apparently. It's a little more excusable knowing that the Steel Rangers and the Reapers are the two most armed of the factions, so realistically their no man's land would be pretty uncrossable, but still. Yeah, this is another decompress chapter. You know, bad thing happens.
Why is there, like, I still don't understand, like, why would there be, like, a neutral faction between no man's lands? Like, what, is there, like, a defense pact between the Steel Rangers and the Collegiate?
Yes, I think, actually.
Okay.
It's like, don't interfere with each other's business kind of thing. Well, you gotta remember, all the faction heads were all...
No, that's a non-interference pact. I mean, like, rather than an active military bandwagoning, like a mutual defense alliance, which case it would make sense that the Steel Rangers would maintain no man's land in front of Collegiate territory between them and anybody else. Is that what's supposed to be happening?
I guess. Well, you also gotta remember too that, like, all the faction heads are all best friends, so, like, or were best friends, so, like, there's kind of a gentleman's agreement, I guess, between a lot of them.
No, I'm trying to create a map in my brain.
Oh, you're
trying to figure out, like, what the fuck the geography is here.
Good luck. I'll send you a map that someone tried making after the podcast, but...
I can guarantee it'll only make me angry.
Oh, probably. All
right, folks. look forward to Weirdington Reviews, a map of the setting.
Yes. That'll be next week. Oh god, we gotta move ahead though a little bit. BJ,
why? Story isn't.
It matters to me, damn it.
All right.
BJ has a chat with 21, and 21's like, I'm pretty done with all this adventuring stuff at this point. Like, we all pretty seriously almost died. So, like, he's pushing pretty hard on, I'm going to go back to chapel, and I'm going to go live with Priest, and, like...
Good luck with that, asshole!
Yeah, basically. BJ's like, I can't really blame you. So later, nerd.
What? What? But how, though?
but how though?
He's gonna fucking walk, isn't he? Like, he's just gonna, he's just gonna go overland.
Of course. he's gonna fast travel back. It's already a previously found location, but yeah. So.
Bye, asshole.
Yeah, bye.
You were never useful.
You were never useful. Thanks for lockpicking three doors.
Or important or interesting. Get the fuck out of here.
But he does question why BJ is so insistent on, like, maintaining this quest thing, and, like, Blackjack basically admits, I'm the main character of the story, I can't stop.
what?
Well, like, I mean, she's basically like, she doesn't say it like that, but she's basically like, I can't let this lie, like, something bad is happening in the hoof and I want to stop it. And she's basically just being like, well, if I stop this quest, the story would be over. So I can't. It's the hero refusing the call to action, even though, like, this is late in the story, but whatever, for that kind of thing. But, like, it kind of rings hollow because, like, the story is over if the main character just decides to stop following.
And also it really typifies how, like, ill-motivated everyone is. Like she has no reason to be invested in any of this stuff. Like, the only reason to keep going is, like, ultra-sunk cost fallacy. Like, you've got 6 months to live, you might as well do something interesting with it.
Yeah, like, she...
Why do you only have 6 months to live? Well, because we've been chasing after this thing for really no reason.
I'm full of a lot of tumors. Tumors are not a thing you should be a full a lot of. But anyways, it's not time for that yet. So this is the thing I kind of like about this chapter, and we'll get into it as we get to the end of it as well. This chapter is primarily about Blackjack trying to fix things, specifically trying to fix Glory's situation, because, you know, she lost her wing, and in Blackjack's mind she took the biggest brunt of this and blames herself, knowing that, like, Glory didn't need to be down there. There was really no reason for her to be down there. It was just kind of like, she came because Blackjack is her, like, fucking, what was the word I was using before? Like, emotional, like, crutch. They have strong dependency problems on each other now.
Yeah, codependency.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for, codependency.
She's hyper codependent on Blackjack, which isn't really fair to old noodle arms.
No, it's not.
I'm starting to feel a certain sympathy for Noodle Arms here that I haven't for a while. In that, like, she's an awful person, like a rapist and a moron, but, like, those are traits that are forced upon her by this. Like, once again, like, I no longer blame Blackjack for anything that, like, she has done, or, like, no, actually, the things that she's done in her distant past are things inflicted on her. Like, there's no indication that it's the same character. It's a past event, a memory, like, inflicted on her existence. Like, it was a scar carved in her history by an alien agent.
Yes, and not of her own volition. Yeah, but yeah, the real villain was Sombra the whole time. Yeah, that's what I keep saying. But yeah, she's her whole thing is she's gonna try and go to the Enclave now to, like, see if she can fix Glory's wingless problem. Glory is pretty, she's in the like coma state that can only really exist in movies, where she's completely conked out for this chapter primarily. But they're like, okay, Blackjack, how are you planning on getting into this with a wheelchair? He's like, I have a great idea. I'm going to strap leg braces to my legs. Because her muscles aren't fucked up, it's just the bones. So she just gave herself an endoskeleton to walk around on.
Exo?
Yeah, she's got exo braces.
Okay, if it was endo, that would be a much more invasive procedure.
Yeah, she now wears leg braces to make sure that her legs can stay the right direction when she's walking. But as they go to leave, she, like...
I mean, that's not really how muscles and bones interact, but...
Close enough. I really wouldn't have wanted Blackjack's wheelchair adventures for this entire story. Fuck that. That would be awesome. But, like, Somber couldn't write that good, so, like...
I mean, because this whole thing is a fucking farce anyway. Like, I'm super here for, for Octojack. Like, just...
Noodling around.
Bloop, plop, 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 plop. I'm here to save my friend. I've got to continue with the journey.
I mean, basically. But now, but instead of plop, 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 she like... It's the sound of hinges walking.
Cool robot. Like,
well, not even robot. They're janky ass like medical braces that she's got on. They're just holding, like, they're just literally there to hold the bone of the leg in place so that she can walk. It's not even cool. Which I mean, I kind of like actually aesthetically. I'm just like,
it's still pretty Darth Vader, like without actual like servos. It's you got these metal braces that were and. And clomp.
That's fair. But anyways, time for the much edgier and demier thing. As she's leaving, they like remove the blindfold off of her and like the bandages off her head, and they're like, oh yeah, by the way, we also had to like amputate one of your eyes, so Blackjack is now down one eye as well. She has like a big nasty scar on the left side of her face and is has an empty eye.
Yeah,
socket.
And one of them is still a glowing like magic vampire eye, sure.
She,
like, what? Yeah. All right.
She's a cool glowing eye, and she's got an eye patch now.
Man, this is my fic. The protagonist of the original story was such a Sue.
Yeah.
Was such a, like, a wish-fulfillment Sue. My character's gonna be super grounded. They have, like, cool zombie cancer, and, a big boss from Metal Gear eye patch, and the other eye glows with magic powers and gives her magic sight, and she can will mind bullets into other people's
See,
brains.
You joke, but there is a part where basically Triage says that. Because they complain about Taint, and like it's like, well, one in every 100, someone might get something good that gets mutated from Taint, but like most people just die from it, which was to make fun of the fact that Little Pip gets like a regenerative factor thing for a while from being exposed to Taint instead. So you are describing the thing that literally like is in the story. Like that's explicit text that like, well, no, my character's cooler because they like suffer real consequences from their actions.
And get so much more rad and put upon and like,
Oh, you wait.
Before we started this podcast, we were actually talking like out of cut. It's extraordinary how this has come back around, but like the colonization of victimhood is just omnipresent through fascistic works.
Yes,
like it's a recurring thing of like, I'm so cool that I'm put upon by I'm like, everybody's my enemy, and it's not fair, but I persevere.
Yeah, everyone's against me, and that's cool, because otherwise it wouldn't be a challenge.
The fantasy of victimhood.
Yeah, the me against the world, guns blazing, trench coat clad hero. You know, the ones that shoot up schools.
So yeah, it's kind of extraordinary how, like, all this cancer, like the Summer's able to justify to themselves that like the cancer and like 6 months to live are like, they can justify that on some level of their thinking that this makes the character like flawed in some way rather than just adding to the fantasy.
Yeah, adding to their cool factor. they're taking negatives so they can get bonus feats. Yeah, we're gonna get a lot more of that later down in the story, so get ready for that. Get excited for future. But yeah, BJ is actually gonna go it alone because like the crew is pretty disrepaired, except and 21's quit at this point. But of course she gets in one last argument with Bone Daddy, who's just like, this isn't really gonna help her, and we sort of set up our theme for the chapter with this one of, like, maybe you should just, like, accept that maybe you can't do anything for her and should just be there for her, which is a shocking moment of clarity from a character in the story, especially Skeleton Horse, that, like, maybe, like, you can't fix this time, Blackjack, and, like, you should just, like, I don't know, find something to comfort her instead. But, anyway, she ignores that advice because she is Blackjack. Cool. We get to go real fast for a while, for the rest of this chapter. So, she fights ghouls for a whole while.
Wait, what?
Yeah, she just fights ghouls. The action needs to happen in these chapters. Nothing's going on, right?
So, like, she, like, clomps awkwardly out of the hospital. There's ghouls at the door. She fights them.
Basically. It's not quite that, but it might as well be. Like, scene transitioned into ghoul fighting. She saves some people after having a moment of, like, self-doubt, where she's like, I'm not going to save them because, you know, I'm edgier Blackjack now. She doesn't say it like that, but it's basically that. But then she saves them anyways because, you know, she's still, like, messianic and all that shit. And they thank her for being security and all that shit.
Brain, no good, can't. So, wants to help her erstwhile friends who are, like, so she, like, leaves.
Yeah, to go get help from the hospital.
Get help from fucking, like, she's at the place that has the pinnacle of technology.
But they don't have Pegasus-fixing technology like the Enclave probably has. That's the logic.
Is that her plan?
Yep, that's her plan.
She gonna go to...
Yep, that's the plan. She's gonna go to the Sky Fashes and be like, can you fix the wing?
There was like a coup there where her family is like...
The one excuse I could possibly make for this is that this chapter is primarily about the fact that this is a stupid plan, and it's primarily about that, like, Blackjack needs to accept that there's going to be, like, this consequence of this action and not...
Sombra is so relentlessly assassinated his own character that, like, there's like a biblical parody I've seen somewhere of, like, a critical reading of the Old Testament and, like, the, like, sort of, like, darkly comic interaction between, like, the Pharaoh and Moses. That, like, the Bible keeps describing the Pharaoh, like, oh, the Pharaoh was pretty okay with this, and so he was going to let them go, but God hardened his heart. And so, like, there's this hilarious mental image that, like, reading that text can lead to, which is, you know what? Yeah, no, you can go have your Sabbath. No! You shall remain where you are! Okay, well, they've already escaped. Might as well let them chase them!
I'm so lost.
God reaches into the Pharaoh's skulls and pokes his brain. Like, what does it mean to, like, God then hardened his heart? Well, he, like, his free will said, like, that's fine, Moses is a good guy. I don't really want to, like, oppress these Jews. But God really wanted to get around to the plagues part, so no, that couldn't happen. And changed the Pharaoh's mind. I feel like this is happening to, anyway, all that long anecdote, I feel this is happening to Blackjack. I don't know where I can trust, like, what this character's decisions actually would be versus, like, incredibly artificial fuckery.
It's okay, so I think the problem is that there is, like, to me, through the reading of the text, there is essentially two kinds of Blackjack. There's the Blackjack that I think is interesting because they're, like, a kind of dumb but pragmatic warrior-driven, like, idiot who makes bad decisions that sometimes, like, cost them things, and that's cool for a post-apocalyptic character.
Sort of a Captain Kirk?
Yeah. A dive-in, like, headlong, dick-out kind of hero. And then there's, like, the bullshit messianic, like, literal Jesus metaphor that Sombra is kind of overlaid onto this character that is garbage. Just fucking garbage. And there are times where there's just, like, huge gear shifts into, like, I need to save all of them. I need to die for my sins. I need to bleed onto, and suffer for the sake of my people. And that stuff doesn't work and is incredibly pretentious and just shit-wank writing. I guess my mean thought, just before we carry on, is it's like someone read the monomyth and took it as an instruction manual. So, anyways, Blackjack fights ghouls. A bunch of dumb shit happens. Scotched and 21 catch back up because Scotch insisted on going to help BJ anyways. They fight a mutant frog for a while. They save some scavs. They warn them that, like, Red Eye slavers are around and they're taking people and sending them to Philadelphia. This is all stuff that's from the original story, so if you want to know about Red Eye, go read about that story instead of this one. They finally manage to get themselves to the airport where the volunteer corps is staying at to get help from. They find out that their good pal that they managed to save from the before when they blew up that vertibug with the laser gun, a character named Wind Whisper, who kind of suspects the Enclave's motives, is now been promoted to a lieutenant, but a lieutenant of the Volunteer Corps. So it's basically like a pointless position. She's been like moved into go die somewhere else position in the military. We get a dumb, stupid speech from Wind Whisper talking about how cool Blackjack is. We get a lot of them in this chapter. This is where like I keep talking about that messianic problem that's in this story, where people just cannot stop talking about how like, oh, you've braved all this amazing stuff and you've done all this thing, and even now you still remain humble. And it's like, that's shit writing. Stop it. BJ begs the Enclave to help, and we basically learn that they can't. Like, they can't even really get up into the sky because like the foot could be gunned down, so there's like no point even then. And also the fact that that Glory's been branded as a Dashite also like condemns her. So they'll never be able to do anything about that. And BJ's disheartened, but she's basically like, okay, then point me in the direction of somebody. I'm gonna go look for them instead. Cause she's now made the plan. She's gonna go try and find Glory's sister to see if she can do something about this. Along the way to go find Dusk, they get jumped by some slavers. The slavers get goaded by Blackjack talking about how cool she is. And they decide to quit from that. BJ and 21 get into an argument about Scotch not being safe because she's a young kid that shouldn't be out in the wastes.
BJ and who get into an argument?
And 21 have an argument.
Didn't that motherfucker like exit stage left a while ago?
No, he's back now. He's back and he's basically like, I had a moment of momentary weakness and I'm more committed to the faith than ever.
But also there's apparently an uncrossable no man's land between me and my retirement plan.
Yeah, I wish that's what it was.
Also, I am small and useless.
I'm small and useless. You can imagine what kind of stress I'm under. But, okay, so we're getting to this plot point that I don't like. But Scotch is like, they have like a plan to go like deal with some more slavers, and 21's like gives up a plan that forces Scotch to risk her neck, and BJ doesn't like that, and BJ is like, you gotta take her with some more like sincerity. She is your daughter after all, and this is when Scotch finds out that 21 is her father. Bum bum bum. This is a plot point that gets said in literally the first chapter, but you have no context for this mattering at the time. But yeah, 21 is Scotch's dad. This sucks because 21 is incredibly shitty about it. Because she's like, you're her daughter, her father. It's like, no, I was a sperm donor. I just had like that kid was completely created without my like volition or matter. And I'm like, to a certain extent, that makes sense because he was a slave. But the problem is, again, this story is not in a vacuum. And this is just misogyny. This is like, this further cements 21 as a red pill asshole. He's like, oh, I don't have to deal with, I shouldn't have to deal with this girl. She's just nothing to do with me. I just, you know, had a kid or whatever. It doesn't even matter. So cool.
Wait, okay. Of course. I mean, does the story go out of his way at all to call him out for his extraordinary hypocrisy? Like, how much of a piece of shit? Like, his whole thing is a project of liberation and, like, stepping away from, like, what? Wait a minute! Chapter 1, he goes on a huge rant about, like, the lack of appreciation for fathers!
Yes. In chapter 2, it's also important to remember, why the fuck does Blackjack care about families?
And why would the baby? Why would the little child that they walked through radiation zones with come to think of it? I guess she was preserved because he was in Blackjack's inventory.
Yeah, of course. And she was radiation shielded in the inventory.
Yeah, like, I don't see why she would have any emotional investment in the concept either.
No.
Like, the only reason Blackjack would have any sort of emotional investment in the concept is, like, well, aren't you eager to, like, begin your, you know, really begin your life as a freeman anew with, like, family here? Like, this is, like, you can be a father, you're no longer like a breeding stud, and so you can take the responsibility that you've always dreamed of and that you've ranted about the like significance of, like, you can have that now.
The best possible excuse I could give for this, and it's even not a very good excuse, is that specifically because Scotch is from his past, and that's why he's got problems with it. But it's not framed that way. He's just a deadbeat dad in this now. That's cool. But again, Blackjack shouldn't care. Scotch shouldn't
and
care.
And so the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart.
Oh, man, I hate this. Like, 21 is a shit character, but he's even more of a shit by being a deadbeat dad.
And it seems inconsistent with his, like, ideals, his morals, whatever of those he might have ever had or supposed to have. Are we supposed to learn that he was a hypocrite the whole time? Like,
I think it's the problem of Somber is like, well, he's a misogynist, so like he should hate this entire concept, even though like specifically like Red Pillars are super about family, because like that
again is reflects rhetoric versus reality. Fash are compulsive liars, and so like yes, their rhetoric is all about family, but like 99% of them can and will like be deadbeat dad, like will jump on an opportunity to abandon a child.
You're not wrong, but I mean that's I don't think that's like the witticism being used here. I think it's just shit writing. Okay.
It's more than shit writing. I think it's more strong evidence of an exposed pathology.
Anyways, we've got to keep on with this chapter. We still got a bunch more to go. This is going to be a long one, folks. Anywho, shit dad aside, they save the Enclave from the slavers that they cowed earlier. Mostly to get a favor from Dusk and the person they're with, a lady by the name of Lightning Dancer, who I'm only bringing up because I want to talk about her later. BJ basically is like, well, if you can't fix Glory, then you can at least be there for her, since like she needs something and I ain't it. Like, she needs like something to give her like a will to live and like some bit of happiness in the world, and I don't think I'm really like justified for that, which is again a shocking moment of clarity coming from a character in this story. But she basically like cashes in a favor on Dusk for this. So they fly back to the hospital. Yay. On the way they get out slightly above cloud cover and they get to see like Thunderhead proper, like the actual like facility of it, since like Thunderhead is a sky tower that's just above cloud cover, and then it's a city built on top of it. So they see like the very bottom of it, and it's like this big giant superstructure. I'm not really even talking about this for anything that matters, just like stay tuned for 70 chapters later when we go to Thunderhead. Blackjack wakes back up in the hospital, because I guess like something I forgot to mention is that Blackjack got super banged up this chapter. Like basically every fight that I like glossed over, she took bullets or poison or acid or fucking zombie bites. So she gets run through medical treatment a whole over time, and Triage chastises her even more and hits her with a clipboard. But this is where like I kind of hate this a lot, because Triage specifically hates like heroism, because she hates that, like, well, if you do this, it's going to inspire other assholes to do it as well, and like then we're just going to have a bunch of heroic assholes getting themselves killed for no good reason. Which is like shit opinions, especially when it's like it's tied with an almost good point that she makes of like heroes aren't really that useful in a world in which like people rely on them too much and won't save themselves. That is almost a good point, but it's also like mixed up with this whole like stop like being a martyr thing that is like kind of self-serving, because she mostly frames it around like you put so much stress on doctors who like feel obliged to save your dumbasses, and that like fucks up everything. Like it fucks up like the homeostasis the waste has going on for it, which is just a shit opinion to have.
Hey, Fi, did you hear about the big Sinnerist rally, the big march they had? very loud chants of better things aren't possible.
uh, things are happening. Oh, like, things are fine where I am. Yeah, it's crap. I hate that, like, so I hate that we, like, Scalpel was, like, this, like, literally the same character as Triage. And I guess that because, like, we're never going to go back to Flank, but, like, Sombra really liked this character archetype of, like, sour doctor character that we're just getting at all.
Deeply selfish sour doctor character who, like, hates their job.
Yeah.
Like, who like, deeply misanthropic doctor.
It's yeah, I don't know. It's a frustrating thing in this story that it's here so consistently.
You should just fucking nurse Genium, and their name is all Meatball.
They're all Meatball. I mean, Triage is as good as any, or Scalpel. But yeah. Then Triage keeps needling Blackjack on why she cares so much of wanting to, like, fix Glory and trying to fix the situation, and, like, BJ professes that it's because she's, like, deeply in love with Glory, and this Glory's the first person she's ever cared about outside of herself, which is in, like, does not make sense with, like, Blackjack's messiah complex. It is just a weird line. I think it's meant to, like, come across as, like, really romantic, but it just comes across as really stupid and nonsensical.
Also weird and gross because, like, you need to have that deep an emotional connection to a friend in order to, like, really want to fix the, like, grotesque mutilation that you feel directly responsible for.
Yeah, I guess.
Ida.
You mean to tell me you wouldn't let your friends die just because you're not in love with them? On to my final page of notes for today.
It comes back to, like, the sort of worldview of, like, man, the hard noble role, the hard noble road is consistently doing the bare minimum. And so this, like, actually going the distance to, like, try and, like, get a friend a prosthetic limb, like, it's so unimaginable in Sombra's world, or at least in the world of this writing,
yeah.
That, like, no, you must have a deeper emotional connection.
Yeah, you have to be like deeply in love with them, or else nothing.
I would not turn my back on Sombra. I would not leave my wallet out near Sombra.
I wouldn't either.
I would not, like...
I'd be afraid of him stabbing me. I just had a moment of confusion because I just realized I put the memory orb symbols in my notes, and I'm like, no, there's not another memory orb in this. Why did I put that there? And I remembered why. Anywho, we got a mosey. So Blackjack kind of gives Dusk the rundown of, like, okay, so, like, if we can't fix this, then we need some, like, I at least want family to be with her. And Dusk kind of, like, even though she's pretty hard and tries to, like, she's trying to distance herself from her, like, supposed traitorous sister, she, like, gives up and decides to help her anyways. While that's happening, because they leave off scene, Blackjack and has a chat with Lightning Dancer, who is revealed to be Dusk's girlfriend, which doesn't really matter except for, like, I don't know, character stuff. She's super mellow, and I like her a lot, despite being a fash, because she's like slacker military. Like, basically, military is the only job you can really have in the Enclave, and she just does not care at all, and that's why she's low on the totem pole in terms of positions. But she's mostly an exposition bar to learn about the reason why the family is such a taking this Dashite stuff is such a big deal, because the volunteer corps seems to not care that much about the Dashite thing, is because 10 years ago Glory's mother went Dashite, because we get to learn a whole bunch of stuff about Glory's backstory. Glory's dad is a cool ass councilman. He got there by killing a dragon. He's a cool badass. But another detail was that his Glory's mother was a surface pony who was a Pegasus, which is rare but can happen, is the explanation. Just sometimes you just get Pegasi that end up in the gene pool, even though they click, they're not, you know, Enclave, whatever. It's a thing. But she was a surface pony, and they got smitten with each other, and he took her up into the sky. And the problem with that is that, like, Dawn, which is Glory's mother, like, cared about things and really, really hated the, like, fascistic government of the sky. So she kept trying to, like, do things and, like, motion for the sky fascists to, like, be less evil. And that got her branded for it, and she's been, like, missing ever since. And the whole family took it real hard, and Dust took it especially hard because she was the oldest sibling. This family drama shit doesn't matter, but, like, it's the only interesting thing note to talk about in this chapter.
I mean, I'm sure it would matter, except that it all relates to, like, a character who doesn't matter.
I mean, now that, like, Glory is, like, fully been, like, absorbed into the love interest character, that's why we're supposed to care, is the thing. Like, I've talked about this before, but, like, Glory is the girl, and I hate that. Like, even in a story where the main character is a polyamorous pansexual weirdo who dates a whole bunch of characters throughout the story, the party composition still demands that there's, like, a archetypical girl that is, like, effeminate and weird and, like, prissy and, like, just kind of exists to make goo-goo eyes at the main character for being such a badass, and I hate that. It's incredibly lazy writing. It's so stereotypical, and it's thoughtless and lazy and bad. And you don't have to do much to give her anything. Like, just give her some agency. Which, actually, now that I think about it, they do get, like, Summer does give Glory a bunch of agency later in the story, but it's so artificial, and we'll get to that when that happens. But I'm going to have to stop talking about that, because I get to talk about Lacuna. So Lacuna is conked out, and they can't seem to figure out what to do. So BJ gets an idea to try and, like, reset Buttoner by, like, they touch horns, and it, like, acts like a memory orb.
Right.
Yep, that's where we are right now. So we get the woo of the memory orb stuff. So much of this is crazy spoilers for Fallout Equestria, so I'm going to be brief on it. But
she's been so overexposed to zombie radiation and orbs. She
Blackjack is a
memory orb. She is orb. She is gun.
She has become orb. Oh, Christ. But so much of this is crazy spoilers, so I'm going to avoid as much of it as I can. But we get a big slosh of a bunch of memories that hit from Lacuna. All of them have a specifically really negative trait to them. Like, we learned a bit more about Somme, one of the Macintosh raiders, where she was, like where it goes into more depth of her backstory is, like, being a reluctant killer who was just a very proficient sniper that, like, hated being one and, like, became a nervous wreck that, like, kept begging for forgiveness from the, like, goddesses, and that was a way of her being manipulated by the military. We learn about fucking Trixie, which is a character from the show who is a prostitute now. That's not a thing that needed to be in the story. But it's just is a really dark point in her story. Then we get a whole bunch of stuff from Twilight Sparkle.
It's because she does tricks.
Yeah. She does tricks. I don't like it. But we get a whole bunch of stuff from Twilight Sparkle, who's drunk off her ass in this scene, and she's rambling at Blackjack because she's rambling to somebody that was in a memory about how everything's fucked and the war is coming and the bomb's going to hit at any moment. And she, in her rambling, she explains what taint is, like the Shadowland taint. It's a chemical in the setting called the Impelled Metamorphosis Potion, or the IMP. It is a... I'm not going to go into super...
Chemical X!
Chemical X. It's one-for-one analogous with a thing in the Fallout universe called the FEV, the Forced Evolutionary Virus, which is what makes the super mutants. So the Shadowland Taint makes the Alicorns somehow. Again, not going into super amount of detail, just read Fallout Equestria. It's all explained in there, but it ties it into this one by explaining that Project Chimera was also related to this, and it was like an unrefined version of it, which is why it made like weird half monster, half ponies as opposed to Alicorns. And it has something to do with some plan that Twilight rambles about that, like, it's a insurance plan if the apocalypse ever happens. This will be a key feature in somehow saving, like, whatever's left of Ponanity. But yeah, and then we get like a dumb scene where like Blackjack is in front of a mirror, a weird magic mirror that like shows her past selves and future selves and all this stuff, and she gets like a weird dumb pep talk from the ministry mares all rambling in her head, and then that scene ends, and when she wakes back up, Lucuna has been restarted again, because they just hit the power button for 5 seconds and the thing booted back up. That's the joke I'm going with. God, that scene's goofy. Okay, next scene. We're almost done this catastrophe of a chapter. But 21 is being shitty about being a dad again, because he's like, well, Scotch is now like, because you know Scotch's mom's dead, and he's like, well, she's just gonna be looking for a parent, and like I can't be that for her, and which I mean is kind of fair, but at the same time, like it's just an issue of just it would be a good point if it wasn't so crusty and coated in misogyny that like it burdens every point with shit. But anyways, we get the final reveal of the chapter where like a plot point that I've left out up till now is that the whole time Triage has been trying to get like Blackjack to like have a meeting with the like leader of the collegiate, because she's like, you know, you need to talk to her, she wants to have a chat with you about something, and BJ is like wheeling her way down the way on her wheelchair because she wants to go talk to Glory now that she's had that like some conversation with Dusk. But it's like it's stopped by a pair of the Zodiacs, and we get a reveal that the leader of the Collegiate is also the leader of the Zodiac, a character by the name of Professor Zodiac. And that's our end of our chapter.
Cool. These people have been like part of the setting for how long, and they haven't. It's the first time they fucking heard of this, or like they've never like put two and two together on that. Great. Also, wait a minute. What the fuck? These like random fucking yahoos who have been like, are they all like Professor Zodiac's degenerate cousins or something? Who like weren't of any use to the collegiate directly? Like,
so it's we'll get a proper explanation in the next chapter, but the shorthand of it is that it's all a found family. They're not actually literally related. They're a bunch of like,
that's even worse. That makes even less sense. If they're like tied with bonds that close, then why aren't they just representatives of the Collegiate?
Because the idea is that the Collegiate is like the Collegiate and the Zodiac are kept separate by intention, because that way the Collegiate can present themselves as just being medical ponies that want to help in everything, while the Zodiac can act as a kind of like shadow force that like rings in money by exploiting the bounty system that the Finders use.
Why would you give your deniable assets, name them after the leader of your organization?
Okay, so she didn't pick that name. The Zodiacs started calling themselves that.
Again, even worse! This is a rabbit hole. It gets dumber with every step.
It makes...
I am physically wounded by the... All right. You're our deniable assets. You're, like, under the table. You're sort of a mercenary force. We need to present ourselves as a purely academic institution, but we need like a strong right hand that we can deny any involvement with in the event things go sideways. Right, on it, boss. What should we call ourselves? Well, Professor Zodiac, sort of our favorite, and founded it. We're the Zodiacs. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's like reading a Palladium book.
A Palladium book, is it?
This is how you wind up with shit like Rifts. How do you spend so many hours overthinking all this shit, all this fucking lore, and yet it never occurs to you like any of the most obvious, like how, what?
All right, you have to either make slightly more cohesive statements or, like, we're going to have to move on.
So has anybody helped reverse the course of Meteor X this week?
no, we haven't seen any more mail, but It does mean that we still have, because you denied me last week, I get to talk about recommendations this week again.
All right. So no mailbag. Meteor X continues its acceleration to destroy your world, you fools.
You buffoons. But at least we get at least as we die, we get a small recommendation corner. Yeah. Because I wanted to plug again the like cool unfinished story that like I was plugging last week, but I didn't get to go into too much detail about. So, recommendation time, cool jingle that I don't have time to put in. Fall Equestria Dead End, that was the one that I was recommending last week that I didn't get a chance to actually like explain why it would be interesting to potentially read. So an unfortunate note though is that this is an unfinished work and it's also like only like a handful of chapters in, but it managed to do a pretty good job of charming me with what's around out so far, and maybe this will like kick the author in the ass to actually release their next chapter, getting some new blood into reading it. So, Dead End is the story of a zebra protagonist who is, like, a terrible person, but I think the interesting thing about it is that, like, the author is aware that they're a terrible person, and the story is primarily about them becoming a better person. It's a story that takes place in, like, an interesting wooded area, so it's a very different aesthetic as well, where the main character is left for dead by her old raider gang, is going to get revenge. And insists on taking revenge through a broken shotgun that they were left with that they repaired up and is going to take revenge with. The finer points of it is that like the characters are very well penned, even though there's only like six chapters out so far. The main character has really strong motivations and has a really good character. Her secondary character is a really fun contrast, like a character by the name of Minty Fresh, I believe is their name, who's just a ball of fun. Like she's infinite optimism and is a giant warhorse with a sledgehammer that like is very 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 peppy, so she's like Pinkie Pie and power armor basically, and that makes for a fun character. The villain like drips with character, which I really enjoy, who's this like sets himself up as this evil like mine owning baron in this wasteland apocalypse, and is super like erudite and talks well and is like cool villain guy. It's a story that's a little bit sporadic, but I still think it's fairly interesting, and I'm looking forward to where it goes from here. But yeah, that's my recommendation. Fall Equestria Dead End. I don't know, read it if you're into reading Fall Equestria fanfics. I gotta have a better way of ending these. So yeah, that's our that's recommendation time over. We've plugged Mysterious Meteor X once again.
God, why can't we be reading that one? Look, Fi, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this might have all been a terrible mistake.